There is so much I want to say, but I can't. There are times the secrets feel like strangling vines. Is it considered lying when you hold something locked up inside you? What if the information would only cause people pain? Who would benefit from knowing about Olga's affair and pregnancy? Is it kind or selfish for me to keep this all to myself? Would it be messed up if I said it just so I don't have to live with it alone? It's exhausting. There are moments it almost comes out, like a flock of fluttering birds in my throat. But what kind of person would I be if I told my parents? Haven't they suffered enough? Isn't that why Amma never told us what happened to her on the border? I know she'd die with that story still inside her, partly out of shame, but mostly to protect us. And why would Olga need to know that about herself? Apa was her father, no matter what. Apa is drinking coffee at the kitchen table, while Amma is in the shower. I pour myself a cup and sit across from him. The sunlight pours in from the blinds.
Buenos dias,
he says without looking up. Buenos dias. I squirm in my chair, thinking of how to talk to him. Apa, I finally say. Apa looks up, but doesn't respond. Why didn't you tell me that you drew? That you were an artist? I wonder why I'm so nervous speaking to my own father. Apa scratches under his mustache.
Who told you that?
Mama Jacinta. She showed me your drawing of Amma. It's really good. Why did you stop? I twist my napkin in my hand.
Because there was no point. What was I going to do? Sell my drawings? It was a waste of time.
Apa stares at the slices of sunlight on the table. It's not. It's not at all. How could you say that? It's art. It's beautiful, and it matters. My voice gets loud, even though I don't mean it to.
Julia, sometimes in life you don't get to do what you want to do. Sometimes you have to deal with what's given to you, shut up, and keep working. That's it.
Apa gets up and places his cup in the sink. I always look forward to seeing Dr. Cook, even though I often leave her office feeling like someone ripped my chest open. I never in my life thought I would like exercise, but Dr. Cook insisted that it would help me feel better, something about endorphins and releasing stress. I swim nearly every day at the YMCA. I used to hate swimming, but now I find it soothing. Life is funny that way. I stopped worrying about all the bacteria and secretions in the water and learned to enjoy it. There's something about it that makes me feel free. I haven't lost any weight, which is fine by me, because my body is tighter and healthier, and I like the way it looks. I have more energy, too. Even on the days I'm kind of lazy and don't want to go, I make myself do it anyway, because I never regret it when I'm finished. Today, Dr. Cook wants to talk about my relationship with my mom. That's probably our number one topic. How have you and your mom gotten along this week? She takes a sip of water. She's wearing bright red linen pants, black sandals, and a white wraparound shirt. Her hair is pulled into a tight ponytail. What I like about Dr. Cook is that she never seems to judge me. I can be my whole self without being afraid. Even when I admit to something that I think is shameful or embarrassing, she doesn't scold me or look at me like I'm a leper. I wish everyone could be this way. I don't understand why people can't just let others be who they are. Mostly okay. We went shopping and we didn't fight, which is unheard of for us. I think I can tell that she's scared and doesn't want me to go away. But she never says it directly anymore. It's like she's trying so hard to be supportive, but it also makes me crazy when she doesn't say what she means. I feel like I can tell right away what she's thinking. She's terrified that I'm going away to college. I know her, and I can just sense it. And why do you think she's holding back this time? Because she doesn't want to push me away anymore. I think she's scared, you know? I think she finally is beginning to understand that I'm never going to change, and she's learning to accept it somehow. I guess I'm glad, in a way, that she's trying so hard. I'm trying too. Sometimes it's difficult for people to adjust to new ideas, particularly if they come from a very different culture. I can imagine that perhaps your mother doesn't mean to be so repressive, that to her, it's a way to protect you. I guess so. Probably. Especially after the trauma she experienced crossing the border. Do you ever consider talking to your mother about what happened to her? Dr. Cook writes something in her notepad. No, I can't. I promised my aunt I would never tell her. Besides, what can I possibly say to her to make it any better? I'm not sure what the point would be. Maybe it's a way for you to become closer to her. To let her know you understand a very important part of who she is. To show your empathy. I don't know. I mean, even though it's not her fault, I think she feels ashamed. That's why it's a secret. Like, who am I to bring it up and hurt her again? When I think about what happened to Amma, I get so angry I don't know what to do with myself. How can people do terrible things to each other? What happens in someone's life to make them think that violating someone's body is okay? It's something to think about. Maybe not now, but in the future. The same goes for Olga and her pregnancy. Perhaps one day you'll be able to talk about it. When you're ready, of course. It might help you both heal. I don't believe in keeping things hidden and buried, because sometimes it feels like poison pumping through me. But at the same time, I wonder if I'll ever be ready to talk about it. I don't know. My lip quivers. Dr. Cook hands me the box of tissues. You have to look inside of yourself and decide what's best for you. I'm only here to offer options, to give you the tools to make the right choices for yourself. You're a smart young lady. I think you know you can overcome anything. Although you still struggle sometimes, I've seen you change in a short amount of time. Dr. Cook smiles. That's something to be proud of. I'm not sure what it means to be proud of myself yet, but I'm trying to learn. The days feel endless as I wait and wait for my college acceptance or rejection letters. College is all I can think about these days, but no letters come in the mail. Then, just when I'm starting to think that my applications were so bad that colleges didn't even bother replying, there's an envelope from Boston University waiting for me on the kitchen table. Dear Miss Julia Reyes, we regret to inform you. And then the letters just keep coming and coming. From Barnard College. Dear Miss Julia Reyes, I write with sincere regret. From Columbia University. Dear Miss Julia Reyes, it is with very real regret that I must tell you. From Boston College. Dear Ms. Reyes, we are very sorry. Lorena and Wanga take me to Lincoln Park Zoo to cheer me up on a warm and bright Sunday afternoon, even though I tell them I'd rather stay home sulking. I can't believe I thought I'd get into those schools. Why did I have to aim so high? What made me think I was so special? Don't be sad, Julia. We all know you're as fierce as those beautiful ladies over there, Wanga says, looking at the lions. The largest one stares at me as if she were in a trance. You can always move in with us, you know, Lorena says, adjusting her flimsy pink dress. If things don't work out.
I know. I just really want to go to New York. I need a change.
A new start, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, I get it. Lorena almost sounds irritated.
Ugh, stop getting sad and let's go look at the bears, Wanga says, pushing us toward the building.
One of the polar bears just had twins, so there is a crowd of people hoping to get a good look. We worm our way through to the front and see one of the cubs nursing from its mother.
Aww,
Wanga says, putting his arms around us.
Look at its little face.
I put my head against his shoulder.
How's your new boyfriend?
Wanga has been dating a hot guy from Hyde Park for about a month now. They met on the Red Line and have been in love ever since. He's been happy lately, despite his parents being complete assholes. It seems like they kick him out every other week. They can't get over him being gay, and Wanga refuses to pretend he's not. Even if he tried, it would just ooze out of him. He's very much who he is. Sometimes Wanga stays with his cousin, other times with Lorena. I would offer up our couch too, but Ama would never go for it. Everything scandalizes her.
Amazing. Lord, that man is beautiful, Wanga says, fanning himself, as if he still can't believe it.
I just need to move the hell out of my house so we can finally be a real couple. Can you imagine introducing him to my father? Gay and black? Ni Dios lo mande. He'd probably burn us at the stake.
He crosses himself and laughs. He's kidding, but not kidding.
The next day, right when I begin to consider a career in busking or garbage collecting, two thick envelopes arrive in the mail, one from NYU and the other from DePaul University. I start screaming when I open them in the living room. Ama and Apa frantically run from the kitchen.
What happened?
Ama looks frightened.
Is everything okay? I got in! I'm going to New York! I'm going to school! And I got into DePaul! Holy Mother of God!
I can't stop shrieking and jumping. Both schools are hooking it up with a full ride. NYU has accepted me with scholarships, with the condition of participating in a special study and pilot program for first-generation college students.
Qué bueno, mija,
Ama says, even though she looks heartbroken.
I'm very happy for you.
Apa gives me a hug and kisses the top of my head.
So you're going to the one in New York? What about the one in Chicago, mija? That's a good one too, que no?
Yes, but I want to go to the one in New York. It's what I've wanted for a long time. There is no better place to be a writer.
I'm sorry, Apa, I say, and squeeze his hand.
Apa nods but doesn't say anything. He swallows and looks away. For a second, I wonder if he's going to cry. But he doesn't. Ama sighs and puts her arm around my shoulder.
Ay, cómo nos hace sufrir. No sé si maldecirte o por ti rezar.
You know I don't mean to, right? I'm not doing this to hurt you. I want you to know that.
Yes, I know. But one day you'll know how much it hurts to be a mother.
I don't want kids, so no, I won't.
I say, trying not to sound annoyed. Ama thinks it's funny when I say I don't want to have any children. She never believes me. It's as if she thinks a woman without babies is pointless.
That's what you say. You just wait and see, she says,
and walks toward the kitchen, fixing her braids. As the end of the school year approaches, I become more and more restless. It's hard to pay attention in class when I already have one foot out the door. All I want to do is be outside eating ice cream, looking at the sky, and listening to the sounds of summer approaching. I see Connor most weekends. Today we meet at a street festival in Old Town. I don't care for the neighborhood much. Too yuppie and white for my comfort. But the festival is free, and it's outdoors. As soon as it gets warm, it's as if the city loses its damn mind. Everyone is excited about life again and wants to be out in the streets. Unfortunately, summer also means people start shooting each other more often. Well, it depends what neighborhood you're in. Connor and I wander around, looking at the crafts, most of which are terrible. I don't know why anyone would want to buy a watercolor painting of the skyline, for instance, or a wood carving of the Cubs logo. But I suppose there must be a market for such things. The day is sunny and almost too hot for May. My new blue dress fits me a little tight in the armpits, but I like the way I look. I've never worn anything with flowers before. I was surprised I didn't hate it when I tried it on. Ama insisted it was flattering, and for once I agreed. I'm glad I did, because Connor pretended to faint when he saw me walking from the train station. We share a giant plate of greasy fries at a picnic table by the stage. I don't know how a person can resist fried foods, because I'm a goner every time I catch a whiff of them. Suddenly, the Depeche Mode cover band starts playing Enjoy the Silence, one of my favorite songs ever. Holy shit, I say to Connor and squeeze his arm. This song! I can't take it. It's too good. He smiles. It's pretty fucking great. The moment is perfect. The sunset, the fries, the music. I look at Connor and a wave of sadness washes over me. I miss him, even though he's sitting right in front of me. It's hard to explain, but it reminds me of a haiku I once read. Even in Kyoto, hearing the cuckoo's cry, I long for Kyoto. I feel like that a lot. I get nostalgic before I have to. I know Connor said we shouldn't overthink our relationship, and in my mind, I totally get it. We're going away to college after all. That would make it hurt more in the end. Besides, I try to reason with myself, I should be excited to explore New York on my own. Here is my chance to be completely independent for once in my life. Connor gets up from his seat and slides next to me. I'm going to miss you, I say as he puts his arm around me. I'll miss you too, but we'll see each other again. Besides, we have the whole summer. I'm still right here. He smiles. I know, but what about after the summer? I turn away. The sky is beginning to darken. I'll visit you in New York, I told you. Connor turns my face toward him. I hate this feeling, the not knowing. These in-between places are scary. But then again, I understand that nothing is ever certain. I begin to cry. It's not just because of him, but because of everything. My life is changing so fast, and even though it's what I want, I'm terrified. You're beautiful. Did you know that? He says, and kisses me on the cheek. I'm startled to realize that I believe him. After summer break. Chapter 28. My depression and anxiety have softened with the medication. My moods still dip every once in a while, but there are times I'm actually happy, not just tolerating life. Summer is my favorite season, so that helps too. The other day I went up to a stranger and asked if I could hug her dog. She laughed and said yes, and the golden retriever covered me with kisses. Part of it is thanks to my medicine, I think. Dr. Cook also showed me some techniques to deal with my anxiety. I'm supposed to write what she calls my mental distortions in a journal and then challenge them with more reasonable thoughts. Like the other day, I started worrying that I wouldn't do well in college because I'm just a broke-ass Mexican girl from a crappy neighborhood in Chicago. I convinced myself that all the kids are going to be smarter than I am because they went to better schools. I got stuck in this horrible loop. I became completely preoccupied until I focused on my breathing and surroundings and forced myself to write a list of reasons why that was untrue. 1. The school would not have accepted me if they didn't think I could succeed. 2. I've read about a million books. 3. I'll work really hard. 4. Mr. Ingman says I'm the best student he's ever had. 5. Most people aren't really that smart. It takes a lot of practice because my mind is so used to jumping to horrible conclusions. There are some days I still feel like the world is an awful, frightening place. Despite that, I want to go out into it and experience everything I possibly can. I'm not sure if that makes any sense. Dr. Cook tells me I've made a lot of progress and reminds me how important it is to take my medication at the same time every single day. I've talked to her a lot about my writing, so I ask her if I could read her a poem I wrote last night when I couldn't sleep. "I'd love to hear it," she says. I clear my throat and pray that I don't cry because that's what I do in every single session. "Okay, here it goes," I say. "It's not done yet. I don't know if I'll ever finish it. I've been reworking it all day." It feels good to be able to explain these past 2 years of my life. It's called Pandora. She opened the vault, the box in which she kept herself. Old film strips of her life, her truth. Broken feathers, crushed mirrors, creating a false gleam. She takes it all apart, every moment, every lie, every deception. Everything stops. Snapshots of serenity, beauty, bliss surface. Things she must dig for in her mesh of uncertainty, in her darkness. Though it still lies in the wetness of her mouth, the scent of her hair. She digs and digs in that scarlet box on the day of her unraveling, the day she comes undone. She thrives in her truth and travels the world like a nomad. Stealing the beauty of violet skies, fishing for pearls, pretty arabesques, paper swans, pressing them to her face, and keeping them between her palms. Forever. Dr. Cook smiles. "That was beautiful," she says. "Thank you for sharing that with me. I'm glad you liked it." I hug Dr. Cook, which surprises her, but she hugs me back. On my way out, Dr. Cook tells me she thinks I'll do great in college, and I decide to believe her. After dinner, Amma asks me to stay at the table and talk to her over tea. At first, I'm worried, but then I realize it's highly unlikely that anything could be worse than what's already happened.
"Hija, I want to talk to you about boys,"
she says as she puts the kettle on the stove.
"Oh my God, Amma, please, no."
I cover my ears. I can't believe I'm finally having a sex talk with my mother.
"I know you're going to go to school, which is a very good thing. Your father and I, though we don't understand why you need to leave, we're very proud of you for being so smart. We just want you to be careful and protect yourself. Boys are only after one thing, you know? And once you give away the milk..."
"Milk? Ew! Gross! Amma, please stop! I know what I'm doing."
You think life is so easy, don't you? You think nothing bad will ever happen to you. I'm telling you that you can't go around trusting everybody.
Amma shakes her head as she reaches for the mugs.
I don't trust everybody.
I know where she's coming from with all of this, but it still frustrates me. It's not like I'm some simpleton who doesn't know anything about life. Besides, terrible things have already happened to me. She knows I'm no stranger to trauma. I've seen what the world is capable of.
You know, I saw on the news that there's a drug some men put in women's drinks.
I try my best to be patient. Yes, I know about roofies.
Roofies? ¿Qué es eso?
Forget it. Anyway, I know what that is. I'm not dumb, I swear.
I never said you were dumb.
I just said you were smart, didn't I?
Why do you have to take things the wrong way?
Okay, okay. I'll watch my drinks. I'll be careful around boys, I promise. I'll carry mace if you want.
Do you know you can get AIDS or get pregnant?
What would you do then?
How would you be able to finish college?
Amma puts her hand on her hip. Talk about worst-case scenario syndrome. Now I know where I get it from.
Jesus, Amma! I'm not getting AIDS or getting pregnant. I know about health. I've read lots of books.
I don't tell her that condoms are 98% effective, or that there is no way in hell I'll ever have a baby, even if I do get pregnant.
I'm only telling you to be careful.
She pours the hot water into our mugs.
I know. Thank you.
I know you're just trying to help, but can we please stop talking about sex now?
Do you want to teach me how to cook instead? I really, really want to know how to make tortillas.
I joke. She can't help but laugh at that. Chapter 29. The morning before my flight, I call Freddie and Alicia to tell them I'm going to NYU. They're proud of me, they say. I wonder why exactly, since I hardly know them. But I promise to call them when I come home for winter break. As I'm hanging up, Lorena walks into my bedroom and sits on my bed. She's enrolled in nursing school and works as a waitress at a Mexican restaurant downtown. She says she has to wear those ridiculous frilly and embroidered dresses, but the money is good. She and Wanga, who now works in the Macy's makeup department, are planning to get an apartment together in Logan Square as soon as they've saved enough for a deposit. I guess the three of us are desperate to move on with our lives.
Can I help you pack?
Lorena says as she looks around my messy room. She's wearing tiny black shorts and a gray tank top with a silver dollar sign on it. I'm really going to miss her fashion choices. She's finally dyed her hair back to brown, like I've been telling her for years. I've never seen her look so pretty.
No, it's okay. Mostly everything is ready to go. I just have to clean up, I say.
I know I'm going to sound like an old geezer saying this, but I'm really proud of you. You're going to be an amazing nurse. You have always known how to take care of me.
Oh my God, shut up. Stop it. You're going to make me ruin my makeup.
I'm serious. I love you. And I don't know what I'm going to do without you. I'll probably call you like 10 times a day.
You'll be too busy with your new fabulous life.
You won't even remember me. Lorena puts her face inside her shirt. I have only seen her cry 3 times before. When she fell and split her head open in the 4th grade, the day she told me about her dad, and right after I got out of the hospital.
Lies! All lies! You'll see.
I start crying too. But a sliver of me wonders if what she's saying is true.
I should go now. I have a shift in 2 hours, she says. If I get there a minute late, my boss will probably fire me.
He's such an asshole. I love you, I say again, looking at my dirty floor. A roach crawls under my bed, but I don't bother killing it. I love you too, she says. Try not to forget about me. I hug her one last time at the door, then watch her walk away into the blinding afternoon sun. I can't help but laugh at her stick legs in her ridiculous short shorts. Lorena has never had any shame about her body. Now that I think about it, she's never really had much shame about anything, which is partly why I love her. Apa is wearing the same faded blue shirt as the day he found me. Ama must have figured out a way to get the stains out because she hates throwing anything away. For months, I've tried to forget what happened, but it comes back in flashes and specks, no matter how much I try to drown it out. Apa has never once mentioned it to me, but I can see it in his eyes. There's so much I wish we could both unsee. Ama was working that night, and the house was quiet, except for my sobbing and the song I had on repeat, Todo Cambia, by Mercedes Sosa. I became obsessed the first time I heard it. Everything in the song is true. Everything changes, for better or worse, whether we like it or not. Sometimes it's beautiful, and sometimes it fills us with terror. Sometimes both.
Cambia el más fino brillante, de mano en mano su brillo. Cambia el nido el pajarillo. Cambia el sentir un amante. Cambia el rumbo el caminante. Aunque esto le cause daño. Y así como todo cambia, que yo cambie no es extraño.
I heard Apa at my door when I made my first cut.
Mija,
he said quietly.
Mija, ¿estás bien?
He was supposed to be helping Tio Bigotes with his car, but I guess he had finished early. He must have felt like something was wrong because, unlike Ama, he never bothers me when I'm alone in my room. I tried to quiet myself by pressing my face against my pillow, but I couldn't. The noise came against my will. My body wouldn't let me silence it.
Mija, open the door. What are you doing? Please open the door. Open it for your father, please.
He tried pushing it open, but I had pressed my bed against it. I heard the panic in his voice, and I felt terrible for hurting him, but couldn't force myself up. I had never loved him like I did at that moment. My life didn't flash before my eyes. All I saw was the picture of me and Olga, in front of Mama Jacinta's house with her arm around my neck. I could even hear the birds chirping. O'Hare is brimming with frazzled people in a hurry. We try to move out of the way as the crowd shuffle past us, but there's nowhere to turn. I'll have to board soon, I tell my parents. The security line looks endless. Apa puts his hand on my back, and Ama begins to weep. How can I leave them like this? How can I just live my life and leave them behind? What kind of person does that? Will I ever forgive myself?
We love you, Julia. We love you so much,
Ama says, and presses some money into my hand.
Para si se te antoja algo, she says,
in case I crave something when I get to New York.
Remember, you can come back whenever you want.
My eyes are faucets now, but it doesn't matter. If there's any place on Earth where people should be allowed to cry as they watch their lives transform before them, it's the airport. In a way, it's kind of like purgatory, isn't it? An in-between place. I have something to give you. I crouched down to look through my backpack. Ama and Apa look confused. Here. I hand Apa his drawing of Ama in her long dress in front of the fountain.
It's beautiful, and you should have it,
I tell him.
I wish you'd draw again, Apa. Maybe you can draw a picture of me sometime?
I smile and wipe my face with the back of my hand. Apa closes his eyes and nods.
I wake up to the New York skyline.
I thought Chicago was big, but New York is vast, enormous,
overwhelming. I wonder what my life will be like there, who I will become. Connor says we'll see each other again. I'll miss him, but neither one of us knows what next year will be like. Looking at all the cities and towns below reminds me of borders, which remind me of Esteban and his perfect white teeth. Part of me wonders if he will ever cross over here. It's his dream to live in the U.S., but I almost wish he won't. Even if he makes it alive, this place is not the promised land for everyone. I know I've come a long way, and though it's hard, I'm trying to give myself credit for that. If I think about it, just a few months ago, I was ready to die. And now here I am on a plane to New York City all by myself. I honestly don't even know how I was able to pick myself back up. And sometimes I'm not sure how long it will last. I hope it's forever. But how can I know for certain? Nothing is ever guaranteed. What if my brain fails me once again? I suppose the only thing I can do is keep going. I still have nightmares about Olga. Sometimes she's a mermaid again. Other times she's holding her baby, which is often not a baby at all. Usually it's a rock, a fish, or even a sack of rags. Though it's slowed, my guilt still grows like branches. I wonder when it'll stop. Feeling bad for something that's not my fault. Who knows? Maybe never. In some ways, I think that part of what I'm trying to accomplish, whether Ama really understands it or not, is to live for her, Apa, and Olga. It's not that I'm living life for them exactly, but I have so many choices they've never had, and I feel like I can do so much with what I've been given. What a waste their journey would be if I just settled for a dull, mediocre life. Maybe one day they'll realize that. When I told Mr. Ingman about the responsibility I felt to Olga, to my family, he told me I had to write about it. In fact, he pretty much forced me to do it then and there. That day, I sat in his classroom for nearly 2 hours, crying over my notebook, smearing the ink on the pages. Mr. Ingman never said a word the whole time. He just touched my shoulder and then sat at his desk until I finished. Though most of it came gushing out, it was the hardest thing I've ever written. At the end, I had 8 handwritten pages, so sloppy only I could ever read them. That's what became my college essay. I pull out Olga's ultrasound picture from my journal before we land. At times, it looks like an egg. Occasionally, it looks like an eye. The other day, I was convinced I could see it pulsing. How can I ever give this to my parents? Something else to love. Something dead. These last 2 years, I combed and delved through my sister's life to better understand her, which meant I learned to find pieces of myself, both beautiful and ugly. And how amazing is it that I hold a piece of her right here in my hands?
Mental health resources. The Jed Foundation is a national nonprofit that exists to protect the emotional health of and to prevent suicide among our nation's teens and young adults. You can find more information at jedfoundation.org. The Life is Precious program from the nonprofit organization Communalife offers culturally and linguistically appropriate educational support, creative art therapy, and wellness activities to Latina teens aged 12 to 17 who have seriously considered or attempted suicide and their families. You can find more information at communalife.org/life-is-precious. The National Suicide Prevention Lifeline provides 24/7 free and confidential support for people in distress, prevention and crisis resources for you or your loved ones, and best practices for professionals. You can find out more at suicidepreventionlifeline.org. If you need help now, text START to 741-741 or call 1-800-273-TALK-8255. This is Kyla Garcia. This is an unabridged production of I Am Not Your Perfect Mexican Daughter by Erica L. Sanchez. This program was directed by Gabrielle DeCure. Executive producer, Aaron Blank. Text copyright 2017 by Erica L. Sanchez. Production copyright 2017, Penguin Random House, LLC. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.